When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
It's easy to look back on the decisions that shape our lives and wonder if we knew, even for a second, that we were stepping into something we couldn't escape. At the time, it never feels like that. At the time, it feels ordinary, necessary, practical. In the fall of 2001, she was a mother of three, stretched between responsibilities like so many parents are. A daughter, 7 years old, two boys, 5 and 3. She was in college herself, trying to keep all the pieces balanced, her studies, their schools, daycare, bills, meals. Life was busy. And busy doesn't leave much room for second-guessing. When she found the basement apartment, it felt like a gift. The location was perfect. Around the corner from her kids' school, a few blocks from her own college, and like a blessing, there was daycare on site for her youngest. No long commutes, no daily stress of juggling pickup and drop-off. It felt like life giving her a break. The apartment was spacious, too. 3 bedrooms. A split living and dining area, a kitchen, a bathroom. The layout even felt like a small kindness. Her daughter, Mary, had her own room, while the two boys, Ty and Adam, shared another. Her own bedroom sat at the far end of the living room right beside the bathroom, while the kids' rooms anchored the other side near the kitchen. Everything was connected, open. She remembers moving in just days before Halloween. The crisp smell of autumn, the children bubbling with excitement at being in a new place. It wasn't perfect, basements rarely are, but it was theirs, and in those first weeks it felt like home. It wasn't until months later that she began to understand what she had walked into. The first crack in the normal came on an ordinary day. She had taken her kids to the next city over, to a sprawling mall. They spent hours wandering the stores, weighed down with shopping bags, tired feet, and the kind of happy exhaustion that only comes after a long day out together. By the time they got home, everyone was wiped. Adam, the youngest, was fussy. He wanted a snack. She told him no, dinner would be ready soon. But 3-year-olds don't reason. He dug in his heels, whining, then crying, then screaming. She let him go at it, pretended to ignore him as she put the groceries away. He stood near the table, face red, tears streaming down his cheeks, his body shaking with rage. Finally, she crouched down beside him, pulling out a chair so she could meet him at eye level, and just like that, he stopped crying. Stopped screaming. His face still wet, still blotched with red, split into laughter. He laughed so hard he could barely breathe. It was the kind of switch only children can make, the whiplash from fury to delight. But what stopped her cold was what he was laughing at. He pointed eyes wide toward the kitchen. She turned to follow his gaze and saw the cupboard door. It was swinging, open, shut, over and over as if caught in a breeze. Only there was no breeze. The kitchen was still, the air heavy with the smell of grocery bags and children's sweat. Open, shut, open. And then, with a final slow movement, it closed. A soft, deliberate tap. Adam stared for a moment longer, then, without a word, turned and walked into his bedroom, as if someone had told him to, as if the tantrum, the tears, the fight for a snack had never happened. She stood frozen, groceries still half unpacked, mind scrambling for reason. She was a mother, a student, a woman with enough on her plate already. But standing in that quiet kitchen, staring at the cupboard that had just moved of its own accord, she realized reason had no place here. Because she had just seen it, with her own eyes, and it was only the beginning. The next disturbances were stranger still. It started at night, waking her from sleep with a sound she couldn't ignore. A rattling. At first, she thought it was the bathroom, the shower curtain shaking against the rod. The bathroom was right outside her bedroom door. She assumed one of the kids had slipped in, restless. But when she checked, the room was empty. The curtain lay on the floor in front of the tub. She sighed, picked it up, reattached it to the rod, told herself it was nothing. But the next night it happened again. And the next. Always at night. Always waking her. Always the same. The curtain shaken loose, sprawled across the tile. She blamed the rod. Faulty, maybe. Too weak to hold the weight. So she bought a new one. Spring-loaded, stronger, a small investment in peace of mind. For a day or two, it worked. Then one night she woke again, heard the sound, felt the dread. She didn't want to check, but she did. She had to. The curtain wasn't on the floor this time. It was propped, rod and all, upright, balanced on one end, tucked neatly into the space behind the toilet. She stood there in the doorway, staring. The room was silent. Still. And in that stillness, she realized this was no accident of cheap hardware. This was deliberate, intentional. Something had lifted that rod and placed it there. She didn't touch it, not that night. She backed out of the room, closed her door, and sat awake with the lights on until morning. By day, the house offered no relief. When the kids were at school, she sometimes worked from home, needing the quiet for her studies. She'd sit with her laptop, headphones on, typing away, the sound of her fingers steady against the keys. And then it would come over her. A wave of fear so strong it felt primal, sudden, uncontrollable. Her body would react before her brain could catch up. She'd slam her laptop shut, toss it onto the couch, and bolt outside, heart pounding, skin cold. She'd stand at the side of the house, trying to breathe, trying to laugh at herself, trying to feel sane again. Sometimes she'd stay there an hour or more, unable to force herself back inside. It made no sense. Nothing had happened. No sound, no sight, no movement. Just the fear. Like the house itself exhaled something toxic that filled her lungs until she had to escape. And then came Adam. It was Adam who shifted everything. She'd already seen enough to know something was wrong in that apartment. The cupboard, the shower curtain, the creeping fear that sent her running outside. But nothing compared to the night she realized it wasn't just her being touched by whatever lingered there. It was her son. She woke around 2 in the morning. The house was quiet except for a murmur of voices. Not loud, just soft enough to seep through the thin wall her bedroom shared with the boys. She figured Ty and Adam were up playing. Kids sneak out of bed all the time. She smiled, ready to catch them in the act. She padded to their door and eased it open. Ty was out cold, sprawled across the top bunk, breathing heavy, lost in deep sleep. Adam sat awake on his bed. Dinosaurs scattered in his lap, more piled at the foot of the mattress. His little face was scrunched tight, furious. She whispered, "Adam, what are you doing up?" He looked at her, frustrated. "Mom, I don't want to play with dinosaurs anymore." She frowned. "Then don't! Go to sleep." He shook his head. "No, tell the boy no more, and tell his mom to stop staring at me. She never smiles." The words hit her like ice. She followed the line of his tiny finger as he pointed past her toward the corner of the room behind her. There was nothing there, nothing she could see. But Adam's face was deadly serious. "What boy?" she asked, her voice trembling. "The boy with the weird name. I can't say it. He wants to play, but I don't want to. Please, Mom, tell him." Her skin prickled, hair standing on end. She turned back to her son, fighting the instinct to run. And then she did the only thing she could think of. She said it out loud. "No more dinosaurs!" She fled the room. That night she cried, not from exhaustion or frustration, but from pure fear. Because whatever was happening in that apartment wasn't just happening to her anymore. It had reached her child. The next day she sat Adam down. He was only 3, but his words were steady, clear, too clear for a toddler. She asked him who the boy was. He said the boy and his mom came into his room, that the boy never had toys. That's why he liked Adam's dinosaurs so much. And the mother, he didn't like her because she never spoke. She only stared. Adam's little voice dropped when he added, "A long time ago, their house burned. They were scared of the wolves that came near." He wasn't old enough to know about burned houses. He wasn't old enough to weave history into his play. He was barely old enough to hold a conversation about the world around him, and yet here he was, describing a mother and child tied to fire and fear. It shook her to her core. Adam said the boy wanted him to put on a Disney movie, the one about dinosaurs, that he woke him up all the time begging to play, that sometimes Adam gave in, but most of the time, he just wanted to sleep. She listened, heartbreaking. What kind of mother could protect her child from something she couldn't see? Something she couldn't stop? She thought moving would fix it. A few weeks later, she did just that. A classmate needed a housemate, and it seemed like the perfect chance to escape the basement apartment. She packed her kids up, moved into the new space, and told herself it was over. For a while, it was. The weeks were quiet, peaceful, but then it started again. Before she ever admitted it out loud, the house began to betray itself. She was standing in the kitchen with a close friend who had come to visit from out of town. The kitchen was small, barely room for 2 adults. She stirred something on the stove while her friend leaned against the counter just behind her. They talked quietly. She told her friend about what had been happening. The cupboards, the shower curtain, Adam's words. Her friend listened, nodding, even confessing she had her own experiences as a child. They didn't laugh it off. They believed her. When the meal was ready, they turned to leave the kitchen together. 2 cupboards stood open, wide, positioned in such a way they blocked the exit. Her friend went pale, lips parting, as if to speak, but no words coming. The room tightened around them. It wasn't just a prank of physics. This was deliberate, an unseen message. "I'm here. I'm listening." The weekend visit ended early. Her friend packed her bag and left that night. Another friend, a fellow student from college, came by one evening. He didn't know the history of the place. She hadn't told him, but he mentioned it anyway. The garage, the cold cellar. He said they made his skin crawl. He couldn't shake the feeling something was wrong down there. She found herself nodding, though she hadn't said a word about it before. It unnerved her that he felt it too. Later, that same friend offered to watch her cat while she and the kids went out of town. He stayed the weekend in her bed, alone in the house. When she returned, his face was strained, eyes tired. He told her he'd woken one night, gripped with fear. In the darkness of her bedroom, he felt something hovering above him, close, looming. He was too terrified to open his eyes. He lay frozen, every nerve in his body screaming, and prayed for it to pass. He never said he saw it, only that it was there. And then, as if the unseen wasn't enough, the physical world began to rot. The cold cellar light flickered on and off at random. The house swarmed with mice and infestation. That made no sense. She had a cat, a skilled hunter, but it didn't matter. The vermin poured in anyway, as if drawn by something darker than crumbs. The place was turning against her. Against them all. And through it all, Adam continued to wake with stories of the boy and the mother. By this point, she could no longer tell herself it was the apartment or the layout or the quirks of new construction. This wasn't tied to a place. It was tied to her son. Whatever had found Adam in that first basement apartment was still with him, and it wasn't letting go. There's a certain kind of terror that only mothers know. It's not the fear of death, not really. It's the fear of seeing something reach for your child, something you can't stop. That's the nightmare she lived in. By the time she realized the haunting wasn't just the basement apartment, but something connected to Adam himself, the weight of it pressed down harder. Moving no longer felt like a solution. She could change houses, change cities, change everything about their lives, and still the shadows would follow. And they did. In every house that came after, the presence returned. In subtle ways sometimes, in violent ways others, but always with Adam at the center, as though the boy and his silent mother had chosen him, marked him, for reasons she couldn't begin to understand. What unnerved her most was how casual Adam was about it. To him, these weren't ghost stories. They weren't even strange. He spoke of them the way a child talks about imaginary friends, except there was nothing imaginary in the way he described them. Nothing pretend about the boy's insistence on playing with his dinosaurs or his obsession with that dinosaur movie. Nothing innocent about the silent woman who just stared. And then there was the history, the fire, the wolves, details that had no place in the mouth of a three-year-old. Where would he even learn words like that? Why would he say them with such matter-of-fact certainty? It ate at her. She couldn't protect him from it, couldn't shield him from whatever had found him. The best she could do was demand out loud that they leave him alone. But those demands felt thin in her own ears, the way prayers do when you don't know if anyone's listening. Friends who stayed in the house didn't stay long, and the out-of-town friend who went pale at the sight of the cupboards open wide in the kitchen, she left the same night. The classmate who stayed for the weekend, trembling as he confessed something hovered above him while he lay frozen in bed. He didn't offer to house-sit again. Even the cat seemed uneasy, useless against the waves of mice that poured into the walls like a plague. The infestation was so bad it felt biblical, like some kind of warning carved into the rhythm of the house itself. And she carried on, because what else could she do? She was a mother. She couldn't fall apart. She had three children to feed, classes to attend, a life to hold together, but inside she was unraveling. During the day, she found herself standing outside again and again, clutching her arms against the cold, unable to make herself go back inside until the sun moved higher. At night, she lay awake listening for sounds she didn't want to hear. The scrape of cupboards, the rattle of the curtain, the whisper of children who weren't hers. She kept telling herself it couldn't get worse, but she knew better. When Adam was old enough to put words to his feelings, she asked him again about the boy and his mother. She hoped the answers would be different, that time would dull his memory. It hadn't. He still spoke of them as though they belonged to him. The boy still wanted toys, still wanted to play. The woman still stared, silent, cold. And the look on his face when he spoke of them, that was what tore at her most. He wasn't afraid. He was resigned, like he already knew they weren't going anywhere. Years later, after more moves, more houses, she would admit it. The thing had followed them, followed Adam. From the basement apartment to the next house, and the one after that, and the one after that. It never stayed behind. It traveled with them like luggage you can't set down. And in the house they live in now, the fourth house, it's still there. Different, maybe. quieter at times, but still present. She says it's a story all its own, one she hasn't finished telling yet. But even without hearing that chapter, the story we do have is enough. A cupboard swinging itself open and shut until a crying child laughed. A shower rod lifted and placed neatly behind a toilet, as if mocking the idea of chance. A three-year-old talking to a boy with a weird name and a mother who never smiled. Descriptions of fire and wolves coming from a child too young to invent them. Friends too scared to return. A house that seemed to rot from the inside with mice and flickering lights. And through it all, a mother watching helplessly as something invisible but undeniable reached for her son. That's the part that lingers long after the details fade. Not the mechanics of it, not whether it was a ghost or a demon or something else entirely. What lingers is the image of Adam, tiny, tired, sitting cross-legged on his bed at 2 a.m, begging his mother to tell the boy no more. To tell the woman to stop staring. Because there's nothing more chilling than the idea that children can see what we can't. That they live closer to that threshold, still half in one world while we're anchored in another. That they can name the shadows staring at them in the dark while all we can do is cry in fear. And what does it mean when those shadows don't fade as the child grows older? When instead of leaving, they follow, attach, embed themselves so deeply into a life that moving house to house doesn't shake them? It means the haunting isn't about place. It's about people. And that's the most terrifying kind of haunting of all. She still wonders, even now, what the boy wanted, what his mother meant, why they found Adam, why they stayed. She wonders if the story of the burned house was true, if the wolves were more than metaphor. She wonders if Adam will ever be free of them, or if they've bound themselves to him for life. And she wonders if, when she first signed the lease for that basement apartment back in 2001, she unknowingly signed something else too, a contract not in ink, but in shadow. She thought she was giving her children stability, safety, proximity to school, to daycare, to her college. She thought she was building a better life. Instead, she opened a door, and whatever walked through has never left.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.